Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, my name is Stuart Miles and welcome to the Pocketlint podcast. This week it's all about CES and all virtual CES, in fact. And while we'd normally be recording this via various hotel rooms on the Las Vegas Strip, some of us slightly hungover maybe, or overtired, jet lagged, all the other stuff, there wasn't a physical event at all this year. In fact, it's all been virtual, which has been good in some ways. I've had strong Wi-Fi and a good cup of coffee throughout the entire thing. But at the times felt a little bit distanced and a little bit jaded. Well, here to talk with me about the big announcement is Rick Henderson, Dan Grabham, and Mike Lowe. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello, indeed. Hi.
Let's get started. So one of the big themes that came out of the show this year seemed to be TVs. Now, TVs is always a big theme of CES. Rick, what's really piqued your interest here from the big announcements?
I think the biggest thing about TVs this year is the rise of mini LED. We spoke about it last week's podcast quite a bit because of the Samsung announcements, but also LG then came out with its whole mini LED range. And what mini LED for me does is it raises that LED TV area into a higher stratosphere, basically making a good, cheaper alternative to OLED for people who want decent pictures. So that for me was the biggest area of growth at this year's CES. Obviously, we had Samsung, Sony, LG and Panasonic all announce TVs that look absolutely stunning. One thing I would say, though, however, is that because we couldn't actually be there and we couldn't actually see the TVs in the flesh, and nor could anybody else, there didn't seem to be as many TVs as there usually is at a CES. It seems that they were all focusing on either one or two main TVs. And in fact, in the case of LG, it basically failed to mention two brand new ranges of TVs it's bringing out this year entirely. It didn't really talk about its lower end OLEDs. And for me, that was also an exciting piece of news, is that LG will be bringing out a really affordable OLED range this year as well.
Now, Mike, as we go through the year looking at these TVs to review and see whether they're any good and up to muster, do you think it's now going to get rather confusing? You've got OLED, you've got LCD, you've got mini LED, you've got micro LED, you've got all these technologies. Do you think that's the consumer's going to be a bit overwhelmed?
I think they already could be, to be honest. You know, there's often a lot of questions about, should I get an OLED, should I get an LCD, should I get an LED? But actually, the LCD LED thing is kind of one and the same. But these new technologies add advances to that. But it depends really what advances they are, what people are going to really get out of them, and how kind of deep their pockets are as well. Because one thing we didn't touch upon just then is there's, I think part of the reason ranges are kind of, they're diversifying more, but there's also fewer products, is because we are really kind of hitting the upper levels of what these companies have achieved. And picture quality is pretty amazing anyway. So year on year, how much more they can squeeze out of it is perhaps getting more limited. So one jump that also was announced at CES to some degree was new 8K panels. So that kind of jump in resolution and what that could mean for the future. But perhaps wasn't the main focus. It was mainly Samsung that kind of pushed that angle. So yeah, there's a lot of terms, a lot of numbers, lots of things floating around, and whether they'll remain and stick for the future, I guess we'll have to wait and see which ones really bring true benefits that people will want to buy.
I suppose that's the problem, isn't it, Dan? With you know, the world's still refined, you know, by lockdowns and spending more time at home, and we're streaming more and all the other stuff. A lot of people may have already upgraded their television to a 4K TV last year to, you know, benefit from all that time staying at home. Was there anything at CES this year you thought, wow, okay, that means everybody's going to have to upgrade this year again? Or, you know, are we in a stage where that moment is going to wait a little bit longer? Because because 8K is quite a way off still.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it as Mike was saying there, it's kind of getting a lot more complicated in terms of the top end options, and it really is sort of what we're seeing is kind of we're pushing the boundaries, but we're not pushing them as much as we probably had done in the past, and sort of these companies are scrabbling to sort of cope with that really. But I think certainly, you know, as Rick was saying as well, everything seemed more focused in terms of one or two ranges that companies were talking about this time around. And whereas usually we have a whole splurge from each company, it did seem a lot more focused, as we'll come on to in a minute. The laptop announcements were not like that. There was a whole splurge of those. But certainly in terms of the TV stuff, it did seem more focused than it usually is.
Yeah, for me, the big picture here was that there seemed to be lots of new TVs, obviously the mini LED stuff, but there didn't seem to be, apart from LG, who talked about a slightly refreshed look for WebOS 6, the operating system that manages the TV, didn't feel like there was a huge amount of announcement there about how to access all these streaming services. It feels like they're just leaving them to the apps themselves and just saying, well, we're going to be able to offer the apps, but not worry about trying to control it. It feels very different from a couple of years ago, Rick, doesn't it, where, you know, everybody was like, oh, look, we've got an operating system that you must have and you must use and all the other stuff.
Yeah, indeed. I think so many of us now completely au fait with streaming services, and there's so many ways to get hold of our streaming services, even on the TV, such as Sky Q, even having all of the apps now, that they're kind of downplaying their smart things. The one thing that I actually did think that they really are pushing for 2021 is gaming. That was one thing I did get from the LG and the Samsung and the Sony launches, is that they're all adding extra features specifically, not even just for gamers, but for next-gen gamers, the ones, things like 120 hertz and variable refresh rate technology. Those were the things that kind of seemed to be the leaps forward from, say, last year or the year before. They're the only things. So it's quite a niche area that they're actually kind of now attempting to satisfy.
And talking of gaming, one of the big other trends this year wasn't necessarily the consoles, because they obviously all came out before Christmas and still nobody could get any stock, but it was gaming laptops and laptops in general, obviously representing how we've changed as a society, working from home and needing, you know, whether it's for working from home or school learning or all those things. Dan, why don't you tell us a bit more about what caught your eye there?
Yeah, so I mean, usually we get some technology announcements around laptops at CES. We've had, you know, thinking back to the past, we've had Intel's Ultrabook announcements that meant that a whole generation of new ultra portable laptops, like the MacBook Air class, as such. But this time, not only did Intel launch over 50 new chips, including the Intel Core H processors for ultra portable gaming, they also trailed their 12th generation Core stuff for later in the year, which they don't usually do at CES. They certainly don't go as detailed as they did this time. AMD launched a bunch of new processors as well, and also Nvidia launched their new gaming chips for laptops. So there was a lot of stuff there, really. And that meant that we got a lot of device announcements this time that were genuinely new. Usually we get a bunch of laptops launching, but often they're based on technology like from, say, the September, October previously. But yeah, lots of new stuff. The Razer Blade 15 caught our eye. That's in our one of our award winners for CES, that with a 360 hertz screen. There were numerous things from Lenovo and Gigabyte as well. So lots of different companies were doing all kinds of stuff. Asus as well, with their ZenBook Duo concept that they had last year. They did have some production ones, but in small quantity. But they've got a second screen that is in addition to that, the main screen, this time around, they've actually engineered it so it flips up slightly, so it's more in your eye line. So it really is, there was quite a lot of innovation as well this time around, I feel.
Mike, did you? I know you've been kind of following the laptops scene as well recently. What caught your eye?
In the context of this show, I think it's just how much they kind of owned it, you know, because CS is such a massive, typically on the ground show. You walk around these big halls and you see so much stuff that you can be distracted by some of the madness or some of the quirky and fun things. And because it's all digital this year, that's kind of completely gone, which I think is a bit of a sad thing. But it's almost refined the focus to be kind of a bit more pinpoint. So all these companies are releasing stuff that people, particularly this year, are probably going to be really keen to buy, i.e. laptops, gaming laptops, and kind of in among that, laptops for creators as well. And as Dan's highlighted, there's a lot of hardware that's been announced that's going to power all of this. I think one of the biggest shifts that I've spotted is a couple of years ago, you wouldn't have really spoken about laptops that had AMD inside. Now that seems to be quite prevalent, and I think it's a bit of a step change showing that they might have the upper hand against Intel in the near future. I can see that Intel's fighting back, but in a way, it just spells out a really good future for what we can all expect from machines across the board, from mid-level to high-level. There's just a lot of kind of quite extreme power available to users. So it looks all good, really, across the board. And I guess CES is an unlikely event for it to be highlighted, but that's kind of what's happened this year. It's become, in a way, like the gaming laptops launch site, really.
The processor wars as such are going to be the most interesting thing for the next year. We've spoken about this before on the podcast, but certainly we talked about it in the context of Apple Silicon, but certainly AMD are definitely coming up. Intel are struggling from, you know, they've got competition from all sides. They're struggling in terms of getting their manufacturing processes sorted out, whereas AMD already seem sorted and are powering on. And, you know, I think the strength of what they're offering at the moment was shown by the fact they had Microsoft turn up to their keynote and say how well they were doing effectively. And, you know, there's quite a few Surface devices that are powered by AMD now. And the rumor is that all of the Surface Laptop 4s that are coming out later this year will be AMD powered as well. So, you know, that's quite interesting. And then you've got the ARM chips that are appearing in PCs more. And we had several Snapdragon-based launches, well, Qualcomm Snapdragon-based launches like the Novo IdeaPad, and there's HP Dragonfly stuff as well. So it definitely that this area is hotting up. You know, the competition between the different platforms is definitely there and will continue to grow.
And I suppose that's the problem for Intel, isn't it? That, you know, while Apple MacBooks aren't necessarily, you know, the be-all end-all of the laptop industry, they are an industry influencer. And if they can prove that they can do it, then other manufacturers might say to AMD, well, actually, it makes more sense to put you in our devices instead of Intel. And then suddenly doubt creeps in, and then that kind of travels through to suddenly Intel really struggling. And you've seen that this week as well with, you know, the confirmation that their CEO is out. He's been booted. They brought back an old stalwart from Intel for a number of years back into the role, and attempt to try and rejig and redo that. Did we see anything from, you know, sometimes mainly normally at Computex, which is kind of in June in Asia, we normally see some weird and wonderful designs on the laptop front. Did we see anything like that, Mike?
Nothing too wacky, to be honest. There are a few sort of special editions. If you step just outside of laptops, then there's one thing that does stand out, actually. It was Lenovo's Yoga AIO7, and that's all-in-one. So it's basically like, you know, your desktop all-in-one PC at home. But you can spin the screen around, because why wouldn't you want to do that? So you can have portrait, landscape. And it might sound a bit bonkers, but actually, if you're, say, like a coder, or you're reading long documents or whatever, then there's actually some kind of logical sense in it. I think that was probably one of the few kind of really standout products that really stood apart for being more unusual. But other than that, laptop-wise, I think the form factors really, they're getting more and more refined. They're getting more focused on, you know, just things they have to do, like exhausting heat and just making battery life as best as it can be, but perhaps not in as kind of weird and funky ways as has been seen in the past.
Yeah, no one came with any really wacky stuff, did they? Because they hope that will be safe for Computex or whatever else might happen later in the year when they can actually show it off properly, I guess, on a show floor.
Just saying, I think Rick was going to say the same thing. Just kind of miss the wacky stuff, you know. It's I'm not saying it's boring, because there's been some amazing stuff, but it just doesn't feel quite the same. And a good dose of the bizarre is, you know, a bit missed. And a bit
I was also going to say that in gaming laptop terms, the lack of wackiness was actually quite telling. I think it was, I can't remember which Acer it was that you looked at, Mike, but
oh, yeah,
it looks like a normal laptop, yet it's a gaming laptop.
So, and, yeah, it's the Predator Triton 300, and it's designed exactly for that reason, as you say.
That, for me, was quite telling, that I could carry around a laptop that doesn't look like a teenager's bedroom, that still has really good gaming properties.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shift. It's the first 14-inch Acer Predator they've ever made, so it's a bit smaller. It's kind of dressed up in silver, but not crazy. You know, it's quite subtle. It looks like you could rock up at the office with it until you turn on the RGB keys anyway.
Now, talking of wonderful, weird and wacky, normally CES is awash with crazy stuff that the majority of the big broadcasters and media outlets are desperate to cover because they look great on TV. I'm thinking in previous years, like a belt that loosens when you eat too much at dinner, or a toothbrush that always tells you that you're brushing your tooth incorrectly, or what have you, because it's got some Bluetooth sensor, or just random things that you wear or put in your head. We didn't necessarily see that this year because you didn't have that moment of sort of walking the halls to find that crazy stuff. But also because I think it feels that people are just knuckling down and actually producing stuff that, as we say, works and does a job rather than allowing to be sort of out there and weird and wonderful. That said, it wasn't just a show about TVs and laptops. So let's go back to you, Rick. What kind of caught your eye outside of that sphere?
Well, for me, there was the most remarkable thing about CES this year is that it was a relative lack of audio products. So I'm going to nominate an audio product that caught my eye that I thought was particularly astonishing, was the Samson HWQ950 surround sound system. Now, it's not, it doesn't look wacky, it doesn't, it's, you know, it's a typical sound system with a sound bar and a subwoofer and two wireless rear speakers. But it's 11.1.4 channels. And that makes me...
Okay.
I was under the impression that home cinema was sort of like on the decline, that people were more than happy to have virtual surround through a soundbar, whereas this goes all out with just entirely enveloping you with sound, thanks to the rears having both up-firing and side-firing channels. So you can't get away from the 3D soundscape that this will provide, and I can't wait to hear it.
There you go. And Dan, what did you see that caught your eye?
Well, Samsung again. I mean, like, we've seen robots at CES many, many times. You know, they're not everywhere, but we've seen, you know, quite a few home helpers as such. But Samsung had one this time called Bot Handy, interesting name, which basically picks up objects. Now, it's a prototype. It's not coming to stores next year or anything like that. But it is massive. But it can it can pluck stuff out of the dishwasher or load it. It can pick up it can pour a glass of wine. Absolutely. But I mean, it just shows the kind of direction we're heading, and that the reason, I guess, why this is noteworthy was because it was the only one. Whereas, you know, normally, like, we've had LG, for example, had several sort of home helper robots and commercial sort of robots a couple of years ago, But we haven't quite seen one that's got this level of dexterity. And I think that's why it was interesting, really, as well as the name.
My only concern with that, and I saw the video of this handy, they seem to have an entire kitchen sink full of rubbish, that like dirty plates that they were then unloading from the sink into the dishwasher. And then if you looked at the rest of the flat that it was in, it was immaculate, like so clean. And you can just imagine, like, no family would keep their whole house that clean and yet just chuck everything in the sink for this one robot to come and pick out and do that. It also kind of reminded me a little bit of that robot that was in Rocky, like what, in the 1981 or whenever it came out.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Where he's like, you know, the drinks, you know, just running around was in like, you know, the drinks machine kind of thing. I think robots are certainly coming. I think it was last year or the year before that LG went crazy with, and Samsung went crazy with robots of all shapes and sizes, didn't they, to do stuff. There didn't seem to be many vacuum cleaners either this year, although I did notice one that could detect when a dog had fouled to your carpet and therefore didn't run over it.
Yeah, that was a Samsung one as well, the JetBot 90 AI Plus, which I mean it does look like quite a decent robot vacuum cleaner, but as Mike was pointing out yesterday, isn't groundbreaking as such. We haven't seen robot vacuum cleaners is a really interesting market. So we keep on having robot vacuum cleaners coming out. And there was a new iRobot one with a 60 day, they said. I don't know what the actual capacity was, but a 60 day dirt bin that you have against your wall. But the kind of innovation in robot vacuum cleaners has sort of stalled a bit, I think, in the last couple of years. We had the new Dyson one last year, but it actually wasn't anything groundbreaking at all.
Maybe it needs LiDAR detectors and all the other stuff. A bit of autonomous car money that's being spent. Maybe they just need to put that into robot vacuum cleaners. So, Mike, what caught your eye?
Funnily enough, it's actually nothing that's on our awards list because it's a bit of a concept. So Razer, the gaming brand, made a gaming chair called the Project Brooklyn. And it's basically this carbon fiber gaming chair that has a 60-inch wraparound OLED screen in front of it. And it's got haptic feedback. So it kind of nudges you and you know, makes you feel like you're actually in the game. And that is perhaps more towards the end of wacky and a bit more exciting. But actually, Razer being Razer, I bet you they would have made one. And it would have been on the show floor. And it would have had a massive queue with people wanting to use it. And that's kind of indicative of what CES should be for me. But in a way, perhaps it points to the whole robot conversation. We seem to be kind of approaching this position where we can't leave the house. We've got robots doing everything for us and we just sit in chairs and play games. So it seems like quite an apt product.
Yeah, and I think the other interesting thing was it didn't make too many headlines. There was the Arlo touchless video doorbell kind of seemed to be the tip of the iceberg. But there did seem to be quite a few tech companies trying to deal with this ideology of how do we not touch things or keep things clean, you know, like UV robots that would go into different places and things like that. So my inbox seems to have been filled with that. You know, the idea of not touching a doorbell and therefore passing germs on seems, you know, quite logical now. But at the same time, something that you could probably do with a software update to most doorbells, Rick.
Yeah, indeed. I actually immediately, as soon as I read about the Arlo touchless video doorbell, I immediately thought, well, why can't my Ring do that anyway? Because whenever anybody steps onto my drive, it chimes me. So that could just be a software update. But it's a good one. I mean, you know, no word of a lie. It'd actually be quite a good way of alerting you without anybody needing to actually knock on your door or press a button. And the other thing, the last thing I think that piqued my interest was the Razer smart mask, which could help us get out of this mess in the first place, in the fact that it's also got Bluetooth headphones capability within your mask.
I wonder also if part of the not lack as such, but there weren't too many products that pushed forward this idea of non-touch and cleanliness, because I think we're just all a bit bored of it. So I think most of the products were really focused on kind of individual situations where you want the best that you can get, or, you know, the best vision of the future that you can have, be it playing games or watching, you know, the best box sets or whatever. And I think that kind of more positive outlook seemed to be, I think, what dominated overall, because it's just getting a bit laborious now, isn't it? So like kit that does what you want and is exciting is kind of more where the focus perhaps was.
Maybe next CES, if we do manage to get everybody vaccinated in time, will be more about touching each other as much as possible.
That sounds like a whole different show.
There we go. And so I suppose, you know, you kind of answered it with things that piqued your interest, but of all of the stuff that we've talked about today and maybe some of the stuff we haven't, if I could be Santa Claus, let's fast forward to Christmas 2021 already. If I could be Santa Claus and say you can have anything you saw, but only one thing, what would it be, Rick?
For me, it's something that we haven't really talked about an awful lot. It would be Samsung's micro LED TV, which it kind of announced before CES, but sort of dwelled on a little bit more, purely because not only is it a fantastic TV technology, they've got 110-inch brand new version, but it's $150,000, it's rumoured. So I'll have that, thanks.
Dan?
Also on the TVs, I'll go for one of Sony's OLEDs. I'll go for the XR-A90J, snappy name again.
And Mike?
It's funny, isn't it? Because we're all going to say roughly the same thing here. As much as we've got a list of gaming laptops and soundbars and robots and whatever, I've got a great telly in my house, it's fine, but I would much rather have an even bigger and better one. So, yeah, I would probably be on board with the Samsung, but for the sake of diversity, I could quite happily settle on maybe the Sony Master Series Bravia, the Z9J, which is their 8K LED. So also rather expensive. I'm sure it comes in massive sizes and would fill out my new living room rather nicely.
See, I'm going to go for completely the opposite way and hope that they're listening and therefore perhaps send me one. You can find the address on the website if you want to do that. And there was a new prototype device called Cold Snap, which was an ice cream maker that kind of worked in the same way of like Nespresso pods. And so you just get the pod at the ice cream pod, chuck it in the machine, press the button, and you've got like Mr. Whippy soft scoop, you know, 99 flake style ice cream in a bowl, ready to eat. That just sounded like a very easy approach to eating.
Sounds
ice cream,
amazing.
Bowl, like,
yeah, sounds brilliant. It did sound really good. I think that's probably the slightly quirky but practical thing of the show, really, isn't it?
That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Until next time, pip pip.